This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
Germ, I think the interesting thing of the Trump executive order, something that we couldn't foresee, I think no one could foresee the whole executive order, but no one could foresee him actually acknowledging Afrikaners as a nation upon themselves. You know, that recognition is worth a lot. So what you have is, you didn't say victims of crime or violence. He didn't say minority groups. He didn't say economic refugees. He said Afrikaners, which is very, very interesting. And I think for us, that recognition is very positive. But in the end of the day, that recognition of a people being a people upon themselves comes with implications, one of which is such a people might have the will to continue living as a nation unto themselves, or as we say in Afrikaans, a folk. If you are a folk, you don't want to dissolve that. So the recognition, it's actually strange. On the one hand, recognizing that we are a people upon ourselves, and then, you know, we don't want to be refugees because we might lose that thing.
Why is he pointing at Afrikaners, and why does he want Afrikaners specifically to go to the United States?
Good question. I don't really know. I mean, we see the acknowledgement of us as a people, that recognition is very valuable. So we're going to capitalize on that. We're going to try and make something out of that. But our message then is clear. With the recognition of us being a people upon ourselves, give us the recognition of a territory. That is the only sustainable, stable solution in South Africa. That is the way forward, truly, because if we are a people, then, well, obviously we want to make decisions for ourselves, political decisions on the highest level. And the only way to do that is a territory. You cannot disconnect a nation, a people, from a place. Those two goes together. I mean, it's very rare that the one survives without the other.
And in actual fact, the word Afrikaner should be a huge clue.
Yeah. And in Afrikaans, you know, we are natives to this land. We do not belong elsewhere. Whether that be Europe, as Malema and his cronies are saying, we must somehow return to, which is not our home, or being refugees in any country. I don't want to be refugees in any country in the world. I don't want to be a refugee. I don't want my people to be refugees. Now, I've got some heat for that because some people say I'm spoiling their opportunities to go. If people want to go, I see this already, a lot of applications. If they want to go, that is their own decision to make. You know, it's that is on them. But my viewpoint and the viewpoint of the people of Orania is survival as a people requires a place, and for that we need to stay here. That is
exactly right. And the other thing also, Joost, is that if thousands and thousands of Afrikaners suddenly go to the United States, not only does it weaken Afrikanerdom, the entire history and tradition and culture that was built here, but in a generation's time, those Afrikaners who emigrated or left under refugee status, they will no longer be Afrikaners. They will assimilate into American society.
Yes, they will become Americans. As we have clear examples of this, right? Afrikaners are actually quite good at integrating. They integrate well in Canada, in the United States, in England, in Australia, New Zealand. And they, you know, everyone has got those friends on Facebook that you went to high school or university with or whatever, and who are now in Australia or the US, and you see them like celebrating, Independence Day in the US or Australia Day or whatever. And you see them celebrating that we are patriotic people. So if we move there, we are, you know, thankful for the host country and embrace their traditions and more than that. A people cannot survive in an age where everything is privatized, right? Religion is privatized and culture is privatized and the almighty market rules over all of it. So in a time where that is the context of the day, you have this situation where you can continue speaking Afrikaans with your kids in Australia, or you can continue being a Christian in England, but it has to be private between the four walls of your house. For you to survive as a people, you must have the same consistency, that the child must receive the same consistency from his parents or her parents at school, at church, at the business they later start, at their employer or whatever. There must be a consistent message. And if there's you know, those discrepancies, if there's a fragmented message at home, you hear you're a Christian and you speak Afrikaans. At school, you hear, well, here you speak whatever the host country's language is, for example, English in the US or in England, and you learn about transgender rights, then the amount of time that you actually commit to your beliefs is very limited. It's in the mornings just after you woke up, and at night before you go to bed, it's the time you spend at your house and with your family. It's not at the business. It's not the friends. It's not your girlfriend or boyfriend. It's not the person you marry. It's not your employer. It's not the people that you deliver services to. All of that is in the host country's language, religion, culture, beliefs, narrative, and belief system. It's not your own. It's someone else's. Mm-hmm. And that necessarily dictates that you lose those things. And they're not, you know, they don't carry the same weight for everyone. So if it's not that important for a person, it's, you know, it's, and it's more important for them to be safe or to be economically prosperous, then it's their choice to make. But do not fool yourself by telling yourself that, well, in generations, in one or two or three generations, my children will still be Afrikaners. They're just going to be in another country. I think that's unrealistic. We've seen it with the Afrikaners who went to Argentina.
Yes,
they tried, and there's a little bit of preservation, but they did not stand the test of time. There's something of their host country. Obviously, it is insane to think that the environment that you spend all your time in doesn't have an effect on you. Definitely, they are different than the people who remained here. We still have the same roots and maybe the same beliefs and so on. Their Afrikaans is even different than ours. You know. Maybe some values got preserved better, some worse, but the community, we've all seen that documentary, is fading. Mm. They're fading. It's not sustainable. It's so much easier economically to integrate. It's so much easier to romantically integrate and marry into your host country.
Yeah.
To pursue opportunities. It's just, if you want to be a nation upon yourself, you must on all sectors of life be able to continue that culture. I think that's the thing. That's our argument in Urania, because we're a majority here. Majority in own area means that we can dictate the culture of the day. And with dictate, I don't mean, you know, authoritarian dictates from above. I mean the people dictate. So if you're a minority, whether that be in the US or in a part of South Africa where you're such a small minority that you have no say, you're one Afrikaner and there's 8 Zulus and one Indian, or whatever the case might be, the majority dictates. And it's actually the same thing that Afrikaners are facing in South Africa. You still feel like a foreigner. Your language is still not welcome in schools. Your values are still not welcome in schools. Your religion is not welcome in schools. Your political perspectives and your culture is not publicly welcome. They are privately okay, you know, and the people who make the argument that, well, why don't you just live your Afrikaner culture in South Africa? Why do you need Urania? Well, that's exactly the point. We are such a minority that you don't have the option to live your culture, because you need a majority on different aspects of life. It's less than 50% of your public life that you can actually live out being an Afrikaner, pushed out of economic sectors, unwelcome in universities, now being pushed off land, things like that. So you're unwelcome, so you can't sustain it. If it's important enough for you to sustain, I honestly believe that like projects like Urania, we're not the only solution. We are one of the solutions. Obviously, for me, it's the one I think will the best chance of working. That's why I invest my time and my life here, because I think it can work. But I think it's the best way of tackling this problem.
There's an interesting overarching comment there, and that is forced multiculturalism really doesn't work.
Yes. Well, it works for whoever the majority is, because what happens is you have to adopt the culture of the majority. It's not a multicultural rainbow, you know, that rainbow, that old overused rainbow hype. It's not true. The entire rainbow becomes the color of the majority, and that be in political opinion, that be in cultural, the way that the children interact with one another, they follow the example of the majority.
I wasn't very clear in my question earlier, so let me phrase it differently. Trump refers to Afrikaners. What is an Afrikaner?
That's a good question, and I think even inside the Afrikaner context, definition will vary. But I would broadly say Afrikaner is an identity that comes from the people that came from Europe past 1652, from various countries at various times, but specifically Western Europe, including Germany, the Netherlands, some English, some Scottish, and a lot of French, that mostly came here because of the context of reformed beliefs, adventure seeking, and the settlement here in the Cape Colony, and then got formed into a folk upon themselves through a series of origin stories, from the rebellion to the oppressive government in the Cape through Adam Tass and the likes, through the rebellions, the Slachtersnack rebellion, through the Great Trek, which formed us as a people, and the Battle of Blood River, part of our origin myth, and not myth in the sense that it's not true, myth in the sense that it's the way that we explain ourselves, and then going into another important part of our origin, and that is the Anglo-Boer War. So a shared history, a shared culture, a very large extent to a shared religion, a shared origin where we came from, and a shared what do you call it in English? In Afrikaans, it's self-built, or your impression of yourself, your understanding of yourself.
Mm.
And those are all values. We have had different names. In the Great Trek, actually, we refer to ourselves as Christian because that was the way that we differentiate ourselves from the larger population. So they call themselves the Christians. Boer, obviously, a very strong part of our identity, whether that be the Vryburgers, the early Boere, the early farmers that used Boer with a capital B, not as an occupation, agricultural occupation, but rather as a description of a set of beliefs, and then mending that into Afrikaner nationalism in the previous century and the identity of Afrikaner and Afrikaans and so on. So it's nuanced. It's tough to explain. Like, I think any other identity, you can ask, what is a German? And you will, who is Dutch? Who's a Zulu? I know that I cannot become a Zulu. It's not possible for me to become a Zulu. I am what I am. I can try to reject my own identity and try to adapt other identities, but it's not possible for me to really become something else. As I think, a person from Pakistan cannot become a Boer.
Yes, we've come to learn that you can just identify something.
and then it's true.
Like this. And then it's true. I've got friends who emigrated to Canada many years ago, and Afrikaans. And they have not really assimilated very well. And in fact, they are planning on returning to South Africa because culture plays such a big role in their identity that they feel that they are not home in Canada. Mm. So they are an example of a family that has not assimilated and just simply cannot become part of that location, that geography, that culture, everything.
Mm. We see that over and over again. You know how many people are living in Orania who were either very close to or already received passports in Britain, in Australia, in Canada, wherever, and they chose to come back. They cannot integrate there. They wanted to come back, but not to South Africa, but to Orania. So I'm glad for everyone that returns. I think that's very, very good. I think we need our people, yeah. And I also think it's actually a bit of an opportunity to self-reflect when you get there, when you get to your new host country, the implications of your decision actually makes you more aware of what you had in your own culture, where you were at home, all the things that you take as givens every day. Mm. It's actually massive privileges being part of your own distinct culture and so on. And the moment that you get to a place where it's mirrored, you're actually another culture is a mirror. You can look in that mirror and you see more of yourself because you see in the differences, you see who you are. So that mirror is quite important.
The executive order by Trump, some have said, is a response by the South African government's signing of, what is the bill? It's the Land Expropriation Bill 13 of 2024, something, doesn't really matter, but it's essentially the seizure of white-owned land with nil compensation. Let's just talk about that for a second. That's a dangerous bill.
It's extremely dangerous, not only because it's, because it's about land, but because it's about more than land, it's about property.
Mm.
Property can be different assets, and it's really concerning. It's not only, well, the farmers are going to have it bad. No, residential area, your house, your cell phone or your bank account can be expropriated if it's deemed in public interest. Now, what is public interest? If you had to pick an ice cream flavor based on public interest, the public won't be able to agree if we should have chocolate or strawberry, you know, because you can go with the majority decision, but there's no public interest who's in everyone's interest. And what is the so-called public interest currently? Well, whatever the majority dictates. If the majority say all the land in South Africa was quote-unquote stolen, then it is in the so-called public interest to expropriate all the land and give it to whoever has a black skin, which is sane. But that is built on this narrative that, the black tribes of South Africa were living here in perfect harmony, and in comes the white man and conquers everything and kills everyone and just takes, which is a total fabrication. It is not factual in any way, shape, or matter. So if you work with that fabrication, then you can come to the conclusion that, well, now land must be given back on an industrial scale and white people must be chased off because they cannot legally own anything. So if you're at that point, you're in a very, very dangerous situation in your beliefs. And we reject that. We say in Urania, we say, no, cultures must have access to land. And that's our approach, to say we are creating an area here for Afrikaners, and we urge the other cultures of South Africa to do the same. Culture is the most natural home where people feel the most at home to make decisions for themselves. So do that and act in your own interest in your own area. That is the best possible solution for this.
Yes, but the reality is that a lot of people are scared, and I think that is now where they are seeing this executive order playing a role.
Absolutely. Absolutely. People are scared. They are looking for refugee status. I think 50,000 applied already in like 2 days. But I think we mustn't waste this opportunity. People are, it's an uncertain time. Uncertainty brings fear, but uncertainty also brings opportunity for change. I think last time that international sanctions on this level was laying in front of our doorstep was in the middle 1980s, and that brought change. South Africa doesn't have a government problem. It's got a dispensational problem. Dispensation must change. It cannot be centrally managed by something like the ANC. It's as big as 16 European countries. So the South African land must be much more diverse, with languages, cultures, races, every possible thing that you can imagine. And that must be a clear indication. So the British couldn't sustainably rule South Africa as a central entity. They centralized it. The Afrikaner couldn't sustainably do it. And then the ANC is failing the most miserable of them all. Whoever is claiming a central government, either based on minority or majority rule, it's taking away land from, including us, including the Afrikaner, but also the other cultures of South Africa. So it's not sustainable. The centralism is not sustainable. So in this fear, in this uncertainty, we must also seek for opportunity. I think there's ample opportunity to state our case for a dispensational change.
Are you hopeful?
I'm hopeful. I'm not naively hopeful. I don't think, President Trump came down from heaven to save the Afrikaner. I think it's a tad unrealistic. I think he's also acting in American interest and also acting in that own geopolitical interest. I think there's also a spat with the ANC about the ICJ court case against Israel. I also think that the removal of Taiwan and the alienation of American allies played a role, and cozying up to BRICS and China and Russia. Those things played a role. However, as an Afrikaner that has got my people's interest at heart, we will use the opportunity. We in Orania believe we live in a justifiable manner in justice with our neighbors and with the rest of the people of this country. We believe we live in justice, and we furthering an agenda of living in justice.
Yeah.
But we're still going to use this opportunity to act in our own self-interest, which is recognition of a territory. So yes, I am hopeful, Jim. I think there's a great opportunity. We don't know what's going to happen, but the train is storming into the station, and we must climb up or stay behind.
I too am hopeful. In fact, if I wasn't, I would have emigrated a long time ago. Something I think that people get very wrong is perception management. Let's just clarify something. There are very bad things happening in the country, particularly with farmers who are overwhelmingly Afrikaners. But if you're not a farmer, life is generally okay in South Africa. It's not this war zone that suddenly the media seems to be made. I get messages from people saying, are you okay? Are you going to leave? Like, no.
No, especially I think if you have some economic tools to put yourself in a position where you could maybe not, where you can decide where you live, for example, that helps a lot, because South Africa is such a big country. That's also why Orania was chosen on a specific location, which is very, very loosely populated, very scarcely populated. So it's a demographic hall. It's a space of opportunity to be a majority. So location matters, and then services matter. So creating your own solar, water, and so on infrastructure on an individual or on a community level, combined with a choice of location and working remotely or whatever, that gives you the opportunity to have an okay life in South Africa, for real. But from a collectivist viewpoint, we are still in a position where we as Afrikaners need more recognition, and that is why we are using this platform that we've been given.
Yeah, but it doesn't help if thousands, tens of thousands of Afrikaners suddenly pack their bags and leave.
That will worsen our case. You know what's interesting? You know, I've not heard. I don't know why no one else is saying this. I haven't heard the president reacting to this news, saying, "Well, Afrikaners shouldn't go." I've not heard him say, "Well, you shouldn't go. We want you. We need you in this country. That's play an important role." What I have heard is only fighting the American government, claiming the things that's happening as false news or fake news and misinformation, and attacking Elon Musk. I have not seen him acting in the interest of Afrikaners, and that is actually the root of a larger problem. And that is the case that, well, they haven't acted in the interest of Afrikaners in a long time. That's why we have to do it ourselves.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned, you know, this is all primarily about American interests first, and I think that is true.
It is a marker in our history. We will look back at this day and this thing of Trump 10 years after he's out of office.
What is the general sentiment in Orania?
I think the sentiment of opportunity, hopefulness, optimism, without being naive, I hope. Obviously, there's also people with questions about the larger extent of what's happening. But, you know, we see everything as an opportunity. You never let a good crisis go to waste. We want to build on this and scale our opportunity.
For my international audience who might not have heard you and I previously chatting, let's just quickly talk about the history of Orania. Why does it exist?
Orania is an effort to create a space where Afrikaners is a majority. Why? If we're a minority, we can never live in a justifiable way in our own interest. So there was a minority government in South Africa, and it wasn't sustainable. So the only way that we can make decisions on our own behalf, true to our culture and our religion, is to be in a space where we are a majority. Afrikaners' problem is not that we are few, it is that we are scattered around the country with no solid central base of influence. So Afrikaners need a home. So where do you build this? You build this in an area that is very lowly developed with very little people in it, the Karoo area in South Africa, which is a semi-desert. People can Google Karoo, K-A-R-O-O. We're in the Boer Karoo, the top of the Karoo area, but also a place of opportunity because we have water. We have the Orange River. We can pump from that. So an undeveloped, open, arid piece of desert, which has added water supply after the previous government built dams. So it's developable. And it started, the idea, the Orania movement's predecessor, Afstig, was founded in 1988. So before the change, it was already saying, well, there's this two kind of views. We are a third option. We are a total alternative option. And that is what we're going to pursue for our people. So it's based on three basic principles. Afrikaners must have their own piece of land, which they legally acquired. On that land, they must build their own institutions because the state won't provide for them, whether that be infrastructure, whether that be cultural institutions, whether that be colleges and schools, whether that be safety and security, churches, social help, whatever. And then lastly, we must do our own labor. Labor is such an important political contributional factor. So with the South African situation where most Afrikaners are using a lot of cheap black labor, not only Afrikaners, everyone in South Africa is using the available cheap black labor, it will always put you in a position where you become a minority, where you don't dictate the culture, where you you're not the primary voter base. And more so, people can claim that they've built your future for you. So in Orania, no one can claim that they built our future for us. We built it with our own hands. Every bit of work here is done by Afrikaner. And for that reason, we can say, okay, what we've built here is ours. It's done by our blood, sweat, and tears. No one else can claim that they were misused or had to build our future for us. We did it. And I think that's an important factor as well. And that's basically Orania. It's grown since 1991. It's grown with about more than 10% annual growth per year, of which the last 5 years was between 12 and 15%. It is built our own water infrastructure, our own electrical infrastructure, to a point where we're about 45 to 50% energy independent from the government. And we hope to further that case. We've built schools. We've built a college, which grew from 5 students in 2019 to 50 in 2020, and now it's more than 200 students here studying in Orania, Afrikaner students from around the country, and developing an active student culture with student traditions and things like that. It's developed on many levels, including international liaison and so on. So Orania as a community tries to be a home for Afrikaners while developing a practical place and a future here for our people.
And I think everybody should appreciate and even mirror the Orania model for some geopolitical reasons too. For example, if you, like me, do not like the idea of globalism or Agenda 2030 or the UN's Sustainable Development Goals, for example, which is more about making an international community and kind of removing cultural identity and putting it all under some sort of gray, zombie, state-driven, homogenous mess.
Yeah, well, I think a perfect example of globalism is South Africanism, where what is your identity? Well, I'm a South African. Well, what is that?
Yeah.
A person who lives in South Africa, what exactly is that identity? There are some shared things, shared experience of load shedding, shared joy if the Springboks win the World Cup. But what exactly is that identity? What is the lowest common denominators of identity shared in South Africa? It is really hollow things like humor in times of crisis. Well, that's nice and it's good. It's a good attribute. But what is the real? What is the normative values? So the normative values in South Africa lies in the cultures, not in South Africanism. So it could be the same with a kind of world citizen where your normative values, you know, what is it to be a person of this world, you know, human and earth? It's so empty. So someone once said, I think it's Ernst von Sale, if Afghanistan is the graveyard of empires, South Africa is the laboratorium of empires.
Mm.
So things are tested here, not intentionally, but it happens. The multicultural project of the world and being centrally governed and all this diversity being mingled. I think it's one of the laboratoriums of the world.
It's a good point. South Africa is in some ways an empire.
Not in some ways, it's definitely an empire because it's different territories and cultures contained in one central state. So it's maybe an empire that lost its ambitions for expansion. It's not expanding anymore. Maybe into the DRC, we won't know. Maybe that's as soon as part of our. But I don't think they have the ability to really do that. But it is still the same borders, almost the same borders as the British Empire made it in 1910. Which was then the largest global power of its time. And it had interest, so it needed to consolidate so that railways and roads and so on, taking minerals from the mines, is easy to manage.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't help you have a lot of scattered territories and peoples and English colonies and Boer republics and Khoisan Zulu kingdoms. It doesn't work very well for an empire. They want a consolidated space which they can control and build infrastructure so that things, the business can go smoothly. You know? So it is, it's the skeleton of an empire. It is definitely what it is.
Something that always comes up in conversations like this is secession and having literally your own geographical region. Now, that doesn't exist. Oranje is a town. What are the prospects of South Africa splitting up in the future and perhaps an Afrikaner country forming?
Oranje, I think the progress that we've made is to be recognized as an independent local government is a massive leap forward, although so very small still. The prospects is big, and realistically, I'm not sure what is possible and what not. I think balkanization of South Africa is actually already happening. It's just... Mm-hmm. You know, if you go on ground level to the peoples of a community in Natal, they have very, very small regard for who the president is, and they've got a lot of regard for who the Zulu king is. The Afrikaners, likewise, have more interest in our own leaders than in national government. Although I think the Zulu people, actually, they feel a bit stronger about that, and they make it clearer that they how they feel. So, and there's already spaces of chaos, which is, you know, typically your warlord or your criminal lords running a space, and spaces of order, which is typically your community running a space. So to a certain extent, South Africa is already breaking up. It's just not recognized. And you know what keeps South Africa alive is Eskom for as long as it works, because it's centralized, and the N1 and the N3. That keeps the country going. Those two pieces of infrastructure is what makes South Africa a country. It's not a country because everyone agrees that it should be one. It's just infrastructure. So Oranje, being a community that was always looking for opportunities to further our recognition, now found an opportunity in what the American president said. However, our reaction is one of gratitude. We are thankful for the urgency with which he tackled expropriation without compensation. But we have to say, if you want to help, help us here. We are not leaving. We will rather build. Building means a stable future, because without stability, there's a very uncomfortable life. We want to stay here, and we want recognition for us as a people and for an area, a territory. And in all that, the Americans can play a role, and we are thankful for that. But we will also pursue every possible other avenue to get recognition for our people and for our territory.
How can I follow Oranje, I suppose?
Yeah, you can check out our, we're active on Facebook, just Oranje, Instagram, Oranje Beweging. People can follow me. I post a lot of updates on X or Twitter, just US Strijdom. If people want to get involved, they can become members of the Oranje movement or donate to our cause. It's, used as empowering us politically to drive, whether that be court cases or whatever. So, thank you. Thank you for the support, and I hope there's ample opportunity.
Just straight on, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thanks, Jim.
If you enjoyed this, please visit germwarfare.com.